Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, here we are, as per usual, on the broadcast roof. Myself, Catherine Whittaker, and David Lord. That is all business as usual. We're brought to you by The Telegraph and by Amazon Prime Video UK, the home of the US Open in the UK. That is all business as usual. What is not usual is that we are joined also, I'm so delighted to say, by Mary Carrillo. Mary, thank you.
So happy to be back. And I love that we're watching the end of a fabulous mixed doubles match right now.
We have it on the phone, we have it on the table, we're on it sitting on a picnic table on the broadcast roof. We can hear the live roars from court number one, but we also have
my
brand new phone. I'm very glad. It's almost as if I bought it exactly for this moment.
Fifth match point for Murray and Azarenka.
I know, I was doing this match earlier. It's been very exciting. I tell you what, mixed doubles is good, isn't it? I've only taken 25 years to sit through
a proper
match.
I don't know if you tuned into this podcast in order to get live, pre-recorded live commentary of the end of a mixed doubles game, but that is what you're going to get. It is match point to the team that has been labelled by Mother Judy as Mazarenka.
They did it!
And they've done it.
Look at that.
So hang on, that's
it's
semi-final.
Into what round are we? I don't even know what round
we're into the semi-finals, which we were in the football until it all went horribly wrong.
Yeah, semi-finals is where it goes belly up.
Yes, but many congratulations, as you people say.
Yes, thank you very much.
It's not just one congratulation, many of them.
Yes, that was a big triumph of ours to get through the last four. Doesn't happen often.
David's just being all magnanimous and positive about it because he's trying to claim to be Croatian now.
Well, I am sort of. You know, my wife, who is Croatian.
No, yeah, David. I understand your whole situation here, but at some point you must pick a lane.
Yeah,
I did
exactly.
Pick a lane.
He told me last night when I texted him saying I'm sobbing in front of the telly. I am unbroadcastably anxious was my first message, and then the second one just minutes later was about my uncontrollable sobbing. He said, yeah, I had really mixed feelings when all three goals went in. Like, that's the text you want to receive, isn't it?
My daughter was delighted. First of all, she didn't watch it. So then my daughter and my son and my wife, they all, I said, what do you think of the football? They said, we're watching Nadal Del Potro. I'm like, oh, okay.
Hey, you know what? That was a jump ball. That's what we call a jump ball in the States, because they were both magnificent.
Well, my brother and my dad were lucky enough to be on centre court for that match. My brother had plans to leave to come to my place to watch the football. He abandoned those plans due to the quality of the match. He said it was the best tennis he'd ever seen live and possibly the best tennis he had ever seen, period.
Can you? And what about Andy Murray calling the match for the bead? Wasn't that lovely? And like midway through the fifth set, he just gently said there were some preposterous, you know, rally and you know, Nadal ended up in the stands, and he just quietly said, do you always get to commentate matches like this?
Yes, this is how commentary is. They need to stick him on Anderson Isner, right?
Oh, boy. No, Andy said that was the best match he's ever seen live. And that's, you got to put that right up there. I love that match.
He's seen a lot of live tennis.
And he has. And he's been part of a lot of live
tennis. I'm so pleased for the BBC that match went on long as well, because for the first like hour and a half of it, they, you know, they had this, you know, big scoop of getting Murray commentating, and nobody was watching because,
is that right?
Well, like, I assume not, because Anderson was busy taking Federer to five sets, so everyone was watching BBC One Federer, and Murray was commentating to an audience of, well, maybe Judy.
Yeah. I think she was taping it, at least. Just before we get on to any more of that, I've got to go in a minute for something else, because I've got to go and report about the Azarenka-Murray score for the BBC Radio listeners.
Just tell them
you heard it here first.
Just tell them all to listen to the tennis, but say, if you want to know what happened, get the latest tennis podcast.
Download the tennis podcast in about 4 hours.
That's really BBC.
Yeah. I love how this works.
Yeah, this is new style technology and broadcasting. Just before I go there, we've just come out, Mary, of the Serena Williams press conference after she's reached the final here. I mean, she spoke for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. I was thinking back, you know, I was hearing Kim Clijsters talk about the day that she basically got defaulted from their match for having a go at that line judge. And the difference in this woman 10 years on, or nearly 10 years on, is just incredible.
Yes, everything about her is... I'm not surprised that she's in the final. I thought she was underseeded at 25. But to see what she does, I mean, she just seems to be getting better on the court, off the court, hourly. I asked her, and I actually wanted a genuine answer in that press conference, over the last 10 months, whose footwork is better, yours or Olympia's? And she said, that's actually a good question. Only because I think her tennis has gotten so good so quickly. These are not baby steps that she's taken. Her baby has been taking baby steps. And it sounds like she's lunging about, like she wants to. I think she's going to be a lot like her mum, is what I'm saying. These are very ambitious people, the whole family.
Her top serve speed this tournament is the same as Novak Djokovic's, 122 miles per hour.
And Catherine, remember coming into this tournament, she gave a press conference where she said that she was only starting to serve, she was bending them in the week before Wimbledon began because of her pec injury. And she said, I haven't gotten anywhere near 120. And now she's popping in the heat.
Now, you mentioned being underseeded, Mary. How important in hindsight, and obviously this is a sliding doors, there's no scientific answer. How important was that seeding to give her the time to play herself into form? She's still done it extraordinarily quickly, but there's no doubt the level she played in the first match was a way off the level she played today. She has played herself into form so quickly, but the draw, this was the first top 50 player she's played so far today, the draw has allowed her to do that.
I think that's true. I mean, she's had a soft draw. Remember when Rafa Nadal won the US Open last year, I don't think he played anyone in the top 30. It was bizarre, right? And then, you know, Kevin Anderson made his way there, and that was a pretty easy match for him too. But I mean, the fact that she's only played, 11 matches now? Since she had a baby?
She doesn't even really seem to count the first few, does she? She calls it comeback one and comeback two.
Right. And what she also said, that she said this a while back, that people always talk about the trimesters in pregnancy. She said what she's learned about is the fourth trimester, post-labor. I mean, that's when things really started getting complicated and dangerous for her. I mean, she was in great distress.
And you see the vulnerability in that press conference.
Absolutely.
She's so open about it.
Absolutely. No. This is, I've watched Serena since she was a little kid. I've followed her whole act. I've never liked her or respected her more than I like her right this second.
She's put a moratorium, or they mutually have put a moratorium on Patrick Mouratoglou speaking to the media. I don't know how he's coping. I don't know how he's sleeping at night. Having to muzzle himself?
She was asked about that in today's press conference, in fact, Catherine, and she didn't want to answer it properly. And she just said, well, we're trying something new. I think the fact that Patrick sort of scolded her in the press for having played doubles in Paris. He said, I'd never want her to play doubles again. I mean, he was pretty emphatic that he thought that was a big mistake. I think maybe bothered her that he is. I mean, the guy is, and all he wants to do is talk about it.
I've always found it a curiosity, a really intriguing, pleasantly surprising curiosity, that she's been so comfortable with how he does talk to the press over the years. I remember when she lost to Roberta Vinci semifinals of the US Open. She I mean, she did that sort of 45-second press conference and then stormed out. And her route out of the building to a waiting car went via the media garden, which is where myself and Eurosport producer were waiting. And she had to storm past Patrick Mouratoglou, who's doing an impromptu press conference of his own in that media garden. So she was busy storming out of a press conference past Patrick.
There's no doubt about it. He is a player too, and he likes people coming to him and asking him about all manner of things, but especially, particularly Serena. Look, everything she's doing is working, and I love she's got that ferocity back in her game, but she's also got this calm that I'm very impressed with. She drops the first set to Camilla Giorgi, who's playing lights out. You know, for a set, Camilla Giorgi did everything right, made very few errors, and you know, and she never seemed to panic at all. And she's been that way. The last couple of matches she's had were worthy opponents, and she took them down. And there was a sense of serenity, right? She didn't panic.
Yeah, that's it. She talked about that a lot, didn't she? The calm she felt when she went to set down, you know. And she's admitted that she talked up a good game coming in here about how she wanted to win the tournament, but I don't think she really believed until the last couple of rounds.
The reaction at the end wasn't one of, oh, I expected that. There was a joy about her reaction that was so genuine and innocent almost. You know, it was lovely to see, really, to see this player stripping back the layers of experience and all the Grand Slams. It is like starting a little from zero because of her circumstance, I think. I've got to go.
Okay. Well, see, all right. We can go on without this guy.
It means you get your own microphone, Mary.
Look at that.
He's literally running. But that is the sight of a 6-foot-8 man sort of running, in case you've not seen that before. Down he goes.
He makes it look so easy. I really wonder if when all this is said and done, and when Serena Williams is old and gray and full of sleep, that she considers this to be at least one of her top three proudest achievements.
Just reaching the final, regardless.
No, just
of what
winning. If
Saturday.
She were to win Wimbledon and get her eighth title here, beating Steffi Graf and tying Margaret Court's Grand Slam, you know, title record, after having a baby, I mean that and almost she'll be 37 in September. I got to assume that that's got to be among the greatest things that one of the greatest ever has ever done.
If she doesn't win, Mary, it's still a great, great thing. But will it just get forgotten?
No, I don't think so. First of all, I can't see Angie Kerber beating her.
Really?
No, that's not fair to say. Angie Kerber's playing very nice ball. But no, it doesn't matter to me. I'm just so happy to have Serena back. I thought there was I don't think anyone genuinely stepped up in her absence. You know, give me the balls. I'm taking it. All right, she's gone. Here's my chance. You know, we had some nice moments last year in her absence, but I'm very happy that it's Kerber and Williams fighting for the Wimbledon championships. After all the cockamamiosity of the first week, you know, everybody just falling like flies. I mean, everyone's dropping and losing. The fact that we have two Grand Slam champions going for another Wimbledon title is, I think it's going to be lovely.
Were you a little bit disappointed today in Ostapenko, Kerber?
Yes. Yeah. But that's the deal with Ostapenko, right? I mean, it's kind of how she plays.
I was impressed with how, I mean, Kerber completely recognized she needed the double break, didn't she?
Yes.
At a set and three love, she was like, I know what Yelena Ostapenko does when she's a set and three love down.
Correct.
I need this double break. And lo and behold, Ostapenko did start mounting the fight back.
And Kerber started getting tentative.
And she did, but, and had she not had that double break, I think, you know, we could have had a third set. They could still be playing now.
It was all about that double break. By the way, I was underwhelmed by Ostapenko's press conference.
Ooh, and I
didn't see her in person say it, but if you read her press conference, she was complaining basically about the fact that center court played so slowly. And it was just a different, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, honey, you know. I don't think that was, you know.
Was that her first center court match today?
It may have been. I don't know that. She kept bringing it up.
Ooh.
She said court one was faster. My attitude is Kerber got a lot more shots of hers back.
Has Ostapenko ever played Wozniacki?
Oh, my God. That's a very good question, for which I don't have an answer. But I have to look that up.
Okay, well, that's a little bit disappointing.
It is.
She's... She's a badass, isn't she, Ostapenko? She's just a badass, and that has bad sides
to say
it.
That. You seem to say that.
I think it's great.
I was going to say.
But it can't be unilaterally great.
Right, right.
All the best people aren't unilaterally brilliant because those people are just annoying.
Yes, exactly right.
I think. Anyway.
I'm in agreement.
Where are you putting... You're putting Kerber's chances pretty low.
I am putting Serena's chances very high. Here's the thing, and you know this. When I first started... I mean, I've covered tennis. I'm elderly. I've covered tennis a long time. I used to think the single greatest shot in women's tennis for a long time was Steffi Graf's forehand. And I really clung to that and really thought, all right, this is the best single shot a woman has ever struck. Now, I certainly think it's Serena Williams' serve. How do you fight somebody who has that much control of their serve? And Kerber, as we all know, her serve can really shake. That's why I just feel like it's tilted so much Serena's way, especially on grass where, you know, there's so much scootage off the grass and off the blades. And
do you think you'd be saying that regardless of the opposition on Saturday, almost?
I think Kerber's got the best chance to beat her. I'm saying, I mean, and this is, yeah. If Angie wins, that's great. I think she's lovely. But I think she is at heart a counterpuncher. And on grass, I want somebody...
Spirit and in game.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Suits her to be the gutsy losing finalist. She sort of accidentally won those Grand Slams a couple of years ago.
Almost.
Ended up world number one and then said, hang on, this isn't supposed to happen. I don't want everything that comes with this.
Right. If Angie wins, I'm happy to be wrong. I just have a feeling that Serena
is... It's the script is written, isn't it?
Yes.
She just has to read it out.
I think so. I mean, it's hers to my mind. The only question I have for Serena right now is her fitness. She still seems to, there after some long points, you could see her trying to fill her lungs back up again.
Yeah, Gerges didn't do a good enough job of moving her side to side, did she? She hasn't really been tested physically entirely yet.
Right.
This tournament. And Kerber can do that anyone.
Kerber can.
I mean, if it's not working game-wise, just drag it out as long as possible. At least ask the question of her.
My big question is serve. That's always my big question. Here's my theory on tennis. I've never seen
the whole
seen you
of
play.
Tennis.
You can be the number one player in the world, Catherine Whittaker.
Okay.
Here are the rules.
I mean, I've got my arm in a makeshift sling right now.
here's my three rules of tennis. When I give clinics, I've taught quite a bit over the years. I say, all right, here are the three rules. You have to hold serve.
Yeah.
You have to have one big strength, whether it's a big forehand or a great volley or footwork, foot speed, whatever. And you have to be able to hide your weakness. If you can do two out of three of those things, hold serve, big strength, hide a weakness. If you can do two out of three, but one of those two has got to be holding serve. That's the rule you cannot break. You can hold serve and be able to hide a weakness. You can hold serve and have a big strength. But you have to hold serve. And that is why Serena Williams has got 23 majors and is looking to win her 24th. Discuss. Those are my rules.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hold serve. So
I struggle to do that.
Evidence in favor of your theory.
Those are the rules. If you can decide, if you can figure out a way to hold serve, you too can
it
be number
it,
one
you
in
make
the world.
It sound so easy, though, Mary. It's
no,
like
those are hard
during
rules.
The during the Federer Anderson match yesterday, they had Boris Becker on TV commentary on the BBC, and I enjoy his commentary very much. But he was put on the spot by who was leading the commentary at that. I think it was Mark Petchy. He said, "What's Federer's in a sticky position?" Ended up getting a lot stickier. He said, what's Roger got to do? And Boris said, he needs to find a way to win points. And
okay.
I thought...
Well, that's a good rule,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. All right, that's... yes.
That, you know what? It's hard to argue with that, isn't it?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. And Boris is a great example. Athletes win Wimbledon. The best athletes in the history of this championship are the ones who win it the most, whether it's Martina Navratilova or Pete Sampras or Roger Federer or Steffi Graf, and now Serena. This more than any other surface rewards jocks, and I think Serena Williams is a remarkable jock.
Talk to me then about John Isner and Kevin Anderson. You're an American.
Yes.
I'm looking for people that are getting excited about this match, Mary. I'm hoping you might be my gal.
Can I tell you that? So Justin Gimelsaab, I work with him at Tennis Channel, and he's a great friend of John Isner, and he's coached him in the past,
yeah.
And he's very much a part of that team now. And so I was actually in the Tennis Channel green room not watching the Isner-Raonic match. But I asked, and you know, Justin, he wandered in, and so I started asking him about the match. But to me, they take the tennis out of tennis. And I, again, deep respect for both of them. I know how hard Raonic and Isner work. And Justin says, yes, you called a match of theirs. He remembered. He said, you called a match of theirs a couple of years ago, and you said that it set tennis back 30 years.
Well, this
so
is
I said that
I was...
on the air, and I actually thought I had said 40, but Justin thought it was 30. Only because it's hard to... But... I think Isner has worked so hard on his return game. It's why he beat Raonic. And it could be... Look, I'm delighted for them. They're both in their first... he's in his first ever semifinal. The guy has always had a losing record, Isner, at Wimbledon.
Which is such unfathomable. an oddity.
Yes, yeah. And so I'm very happy for him. And I love Kevin Anderson. We all
do. If it was Isner against Nadal or something like... You know, it's the... I don't want to... It's not them as individuals. They completely earn their position. We just
correct.
So wish the draw
it's
had been... It's matchups.
It's matchups.
Matchups is everything.
Matchups are everything, on and off the court.
We're covering philosophy. We're covering all the things. John Isner might end up being responsible for bringing Donald Trump to Wimbledon.
That cannot
luring
be.
Luring Donald Trump.
Can I tell
away.
You something? I don't know how much your audience follows American politics, but...
Everyone follows American
okay,
politics.
Okay, yes. Well, Martina Navratilova has invited on Saturday for the women's final Michael Avenatti, who is the now famous lawyer for Stormy Daniels, the woman who is they're suing Trump.
Oh, yeah.
So Martina, as you can imagine, does not have the same sensibilities as John Isner.
No.
And so if Donald Trump and Michael Avenatti, that would be a match I'd like to watch on center court. This guy goes after him.
For Martina, who has U.S. citizenship, I know you won't want to speak on her behalf, but how does she feel about John Isner? Is she able to separate her, you know, is she able to just support him as a sportsman and as a countryman and separate the, can you separate? If they're people that speak about
answer.
It publicly, which he has
yes.
this fortnight.
He said he'd be proud to have Donald Trump.
Is it wrong of us to... He said, awesome. He said it'd be awesome and
be
proud.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I happen not to agree with that particular statement.
Yeah.
But I don't think Martina would agree with that statement. I don't know that she'd go after him.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
I think,
difficult, isn't it? I mean...
I can't... I don't see it happening, by the way.
Yeah.
It would be,
he's got
it would
golf
be,
to play in Scotland. That's
no, and
what
also
I've
just
heard.
Security for
Turnbury,
all that.
Turnbury, watch out.
There's no way the All England Club is ready to have Donald Trump come to center
you think
court.
The security would be greater than for the royals? We've had royals.
Hey, so Madame Markle, whatever you call her, the Royal Duchess,
the Duchess of Sussex,
is coming on Saturday. She's
is
coming
she?
To watch Serena.
Oh, well, he can come too. They
the
can
palace
share,
has made
they,
a statement.
They can share a security detail. Can you imagine, have you seen the giant blow-up baby?
Not personally.
You might see it floating over Wimbledon tomorrow.
Look who's decided to wander back.
Hello, Miss Fudge.
We have covered, I think
we're on to Donald Trump.
We're
we've
on
devolved.
To Trump, David.
Uh-oh. You've missed a lot.
You left us
Are we going to get arrested?
And we've moved on to the giant inflatable Trump baby, which
right.
might be floating over Wimbledon tomorrow.
I see. Mm. I wasn't expecting that.
No.
I've just been talking about Harriet Dart and Jay Clark reaching the mixed doubles semi-final against Jamie Murray.
Harriet Dart and Jay Clark, aren't they like... two of Harry Potter's closest friends?
They're about that sort of age group, you know?
I have to say. The names are too English, aren't they? Harriet Dart.
So all British... Well, not all British. There will definitely be a British player in the mixed doubles final.
Which there has been for the last... Like, last year there was Britishness on both sides of the net, wasn't there? Because Heather Watson and Henry Kontinen.
Correct.
Yes. Anyway... we haven't. The only we've done the women's, David. Mm. We've definitely said everything there is to say about Isner Anderson, unless you've got
something.
If
to add.
I was only away for about 60 seconds.
Yeah.
You've already fitted that in, have you?
Yeah. Right. Well, have you got anything to add? Yeah,
it's going to be big serving. There we are.
Yeah.
Analysis.
Tie breaks.
Possibly, yeah.
Does anyone care to make a prediction there?
I am going for John Isner to win.
I am too.
Are you?
I'm going to give him... Look, the guy's 33 years old. He's never played better.
Kevin Anderson is committed.
He is.
He is. Commits. He doesn't come on. He commits.
That's the technical term, is it?
That's what he says. His team aren't allowed to say come on, they have to say commit.
Wow.
He's done all this sports psychology stuff.
Yes,
and it's all about language and framing things. And you're looking at me like
I'm fascinated. I mean, sports psychology,
incidentally, is one of the untalked about facets of tennis.
And
which
a lot of them use.
So, yeah, I mean, Simona Halep and Andy Murray went to the same one. Why are we not getting her on the tennis podcast?
Yeah, exactly. Why is everybody not interviewing her?
Can I just say,
so John Isner, when he won Miami, his first Masters 1000 title, he thanked a whole gaggle of people, a herd of, you know, friends and family, and he included his sports psychologist, and this is the first time I've ever heard this in an acceptance speech. He thanked his chiropractor. He did. It was fabulous.
That's what happens when you're 32 and winning titles.
That's exactly
right.
And now
Federer never thanked his chiropractor.
Yeah, and now he's 33 and he's playing his best tennis ever, and it's about time he lit up some grass courts.
I actually liked his answer that now I can finally put 2010 behind me.
Yeah, know? Do you think he'll get a blue plaque for reaching the final? Because he's got there's a blue plaque on court 18, isn't there? Is it blue?
I don't know, but it's there.
Yes,
and I mean, they had to make it pretty big to fit all the digits in. So
the only thing we haven't covered is looking ahead to Nadal Djokovic. Take
52. 26-25 in favour of Novak Djokovic.
Is that, of all of the matchups, that one is the longest running, huh? More than Federer and Nadal. I don't think people understand how much.
It's the highest number of matches. And I mean, how incredible, isn't it? To think that they've split basically 51 matches between them.
That's pretty good. I like Nadal in that. I like Nadal because I think as well as Djokovic has come back. We talked about this in Paris. There are comebacks and there are come all the way backs.
Yeah.
He and Serena are doing the come all the way back thing here at Wimbledon, I'm happy to say. But I think he still has those mental lapses that might allow someone like Nadal, who has never taken a point off in his career, That would be my question mark.
There were grouchy patches yesterday, weren't there, from Djokovic?
His tennis level, basic level, is enough at the moment, I think, to take out Nadal if he could stay constant.
But that's the question.
That is the problem. As you say, I mean, it did not look like he was going to lose a set yesterday, level-wise, and yet he still did.
Right.
Can you get away with that against Nadal?
I can't imagine that you can. Isn't he looking good?
He is, but he could be tired. Bless him.
I mean,
that was grueling.
Yeah, that was pretty...
That was grueling against Del Potro, and it finished late. You know, hours matter.
Can I tell you that when they played that match for the Australian Open, that went, what, it was 5 hours and 53 minutes? Remember that match?
Yeah.
Crazy and remarkable. Actually, it was disturbing for me because it lasted so long and it was so physical and it was on a hard court. I genuinely think that took a year off both of their careers. That one match.
Yeah.
Just to recover from it.
Was that a moment that you thought maybe, right, it's time for best of three at these things? Or
My feeling is mostly... I've seen some glorious five-set matches. I'm not sure exactly where I land on that, except that to me... It doesn't have to be a fifth set. It has to be the last set, you know. And if people see the finish line early, then they would probably bring their best right away and not try to pace themselves. And if there were best of three on the men's side, there'd be a lot more women's matches on the big courts. You know, you'd get more matches in. You wouldn't have to play two men's match and a women's.
Yeah. I have to say, I'm coming around to the idea of splitting it down the middle, or at least having the last three rounds best of five on both men's and women's, when you have fewer matches to fit in. You don't need to worry about that element as much. And you wouldn't get a situation like today when I feel as though both Ostapenko and Gerges, well, certainly Ostapenko, might have made a better fist of it if she'd had more time.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's why I think this Djokovic-Nadal match can go long as well. You know, that has the chance of going long. Long matches don't necessarily ennoble matches, you know? I mean, Raonic and Isner, that could be, like, that's the same point over and over again, right? When groundstrokers go up against each other, it's the same point over. Djokovic and Murray play the same rally over and over again, which is sometimes why those matches don't. I'm not terribly excited about those matchups, but I think we've got a nice weekend ahead of us.
I found one more question about Isner Anderson.
Did you?
Yeah, I was going to ask it before, but it's better actually that you're here as well, David. Two people with longer memories than me.
Well, that's a nice weekend. Right. We're old.
I was texting.
We can just go over here and have our own podcast if you like, Mary. You know, the
I didn't
seniors.
Come here to be insulted.
Tennis podcast seniors.
I was texting my brother last night post his extraordinary time on Centre Court and about. Isner Anderson and the prospect of Isner Raonic and the prospect of Isner Anderson, and he said, you know, makes you so grateful and glad for tennis as it is now, because this was tennis in the 90s.
That's right.
Is that what tennis was like in the 90s, pretty universally?
There was definitely a period. I mean, if you think back to the 94 Wimbledon final between Goran and Pete Sampras, mm-hmm. where there just weren't rallies at all.
And that's why they changed the courts, right? And I know they got a hard time for that, because apparently that's why Tim Henman didn't win Wimbledon. But, you know, I'm really glad they changed the courts.
Yes, and that's why I think, and at Roland Garros, I think they were tired of like Sergi Bergeros and all those, you know, I think they tried to speed up the courts, the red clay courts. You know, you're always trying to, like in baseball back home, sometimes if the pitchers are dominating baseball, they'll lower the mound so they have less leverage and all that kind of stuff. So you can always be tweaking around and stuff, and that's all fine. I still prefer, I wish the grass, oh, I love grass. This place is ridiculously gorgeous and beautiful. But I must say, I like a faster hard court. I love the Australian Open. I just think in the last several years, some of the best matches we've had have been coming off of those hard courts, because there's some speed in them.
I agree.
And it rewards people who create, right? You know, you're not just kind of faffing around on the baseline.
How many, if you transport Kevin Anderson to the 90s, many Grand Slams would he win?
Not many. Because he's not as good as these
you
guys.
You don't think... No,
he's not, is he? He's a good player.
Is he as good as Richard Krajicek, Michael Stich?
I don't think so.
Like the man he's facing, isn't he? They're playing their very best ball now. In their dotage.
But canister-wise, Mary, they're not, because they went to college.
Exactly. I think
so actually, canister-wise, take 4 years off their life expectancy. No, add 4 years to their life expectancy.
Career life expectancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope.
I think college, I'm a big fan of the fact that they wanted to grow up there. You know, they wanted to do that. I don't know. I'm hoping it's going to be... Let's just put it this way. When I saw the schedule yesterday for the men's matches, and they put Raonic and Isner, which could have been... That final set could have been 372 to 370, and it was going up against World Cup, I was not surprised that they elected not to put that match on center.
Or first.
Yeah. I thought that was a good decision by the club.
There have been a few good decisions by the club recently.
Yes, we thought it was a splendid decision to put Djokovic on centre yesterday, as irritated as many people who tweeted me were.
I've had a lot of people on Twitter accusing me of causing Federer's defeat.
I blamed you.
Suggesting that it might be good in the interest of fairness to maybe pop him on court number one at some point.
I have to tell you a story. So Tony Gonsig, who's Roger's agent, he was going on. I saw him the day before. I was watching Mary Jo and Lindsay Davenport, two buddies of mine, play their Jurassic doubles over there, legends as they call it. I tend to call it Jurassic doubles, and I'm a big fan. I'm stepping back from...
Affectionately said.
Anyway, so I'm sitting with Tony, and I'm sitting there, and he's complaining. He's worried about the fact... Because he's got sponsors he's got to worry about. Now, all of a sudden, these sponsors... Barilla and whatever.
He's got a $300 million Uniqlo deal.
He's got a whole thing going, and Tony can't get... They didn't have tickets for court one. So Tony was, going on about all that and how complicated that is. And I finally said, Tony, is Roger as upset about this as you are? And he said, no one is as upset about this. But that's beside the point. What was great is that Federer's two girls were sitting watching Mary Jo. They're very close, and Mary Jo loves them right back. And so they're watching, and Mary Jo and Lindsay Davenport are losing this match to Hantikova and Bartoli. And Tony and I are just talking, not about the match. We're kind of watching and kind of just throwing it around. And one of Federer's girls says to Tony, Mary Jo, they were, Mary Jo's about to lose. It's like she was actually paying attention to this match. And Tony said, well, that's okay, honey. You know, it's not about winning or losing. It's about participation. To which this kid looked at him, this Federer kid, and said, what's participation? She never heard of the word. She couldn't even grasp the concept. Isn't that lovely? That's my favorite story from the fortnight.
That's my favorite story of the year.
Those kids.
Although I did particularly enjoy Vassos Alexander yesterday describing the route that Roger Federer took or would have had to take if it's anything like ours to court one and having to walk past bins to get there.
Anyway. What a terrible indignity to have to play on court number one at Wimbledon.
Oh, boy.
If that's the worst indignity that Federer is suffering in his life, I'm not...
I don't think he'd have minded.
No, I don't think he minded at all.
I think, as I said, I think it was more a function of how do I get enough seats? You know, how do I get all my people into that court?
Apparently Serena, who Marion was saying, she only gets two tickets and she gave one of them to Drake.
There you go.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
That'd be pretty cool,
Drake,
wouldn't it?
Drake didn't get to bring a guest.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tough, Drake.
Yeah, drinking his white wine spritzers just solo.
Do you think court one made any difference, though? Because it is different out there, isn't it?
He kind of alluded to that a little bit after the match, Roger. He thought it was windy, and I think it's windier on one than it is on center. Center's more enclosed. But I don't think he was making an excuse.
No, but there's a different feel.
There's got to be different sight lines, obviously.
He was stroking it around, though, yesterday. He was not going for it with confidence.
Tentative. No, he was. I thought he played a pretty tentative match after the first couple of sets. He did. And he had played his last 19 matches on center, some ridiculous number. He hadn't played there on one since 2015. But what I've come to understand about this is it's all about participation. That's why I'm on your podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
And on that bombshell.
I do love the way we just sort of ignore our own time limit for the podcast because Mary's on it. And a story's underway and we're just like, forget it.
Just carry on. We have gone well over. I'm sure everyone tuned out like
Absolutely.
4 minutes ago when we went over the 30-minute mark. Any other business, just while we've got Mary, David?
I just sort of want to milk it, really. But
yeah.
Would
you like
be
to know that the Blackberry punnet sitting in front of you was purchased from the very same shop that Rafael Nadal is apparently buying his groceries from this
Did you have
night.
To sell your car to buy it?
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, I'm told it's pretty pricey there.
Yeah, Bailey and Sage, Wimbledon Village.
Yeah, they don't let riffraff like me in there.
You might cause some havoc. The aisles are pretty narrow. Anyway.
What are you saying?
I had to manoeuvre around.
I mean, if you'd have said headroom, I'd have been all right with it.
Let me tell you something. That was a remark.
No, I'm off.
I know from remarks.
Do we have anything else?
I can't think of anything. No. What day is it tomorrow?
Do you have any reports on soon-to-be-out-of-date doubles matches?
No, I don't. It's Friday tomorrow, so we start with Isner against, who is it?
Anderson.
And then it's Rafael Nadal against Novak Djokovic. Who's going to win, Catherine? We haven't had your prediction yet.
Well, before the tournament, I picked a Federer-Djokovic final.
Before the tournament, he's irrelevant.
So Djokovic is my only horse
said.
In this race. So I'm going to commit. Wow. I'm going to go Djokovic at Anderson.
And you guys should be committed.
Yeah. I'm going to commit all over that.
I'm going to go... I'd go Nadal, just because of that mental strength element. And
I sort of agree with you.
I think you'll face, isn't it?
Got to back my horse.
And so what would... If Nadal were to win, so what would the major count be? Nadal and Federer? Roger's got 20. Nadal would have 18.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes.
Is he, is he catching him? Wow. If he gets to 18 and he wins on Federer's turf, is he catching Roger Federer and overtaking him before their careers are over?
It's undeniable. I mean, I have no problem with people saying that Roger Federer is the GOAT. But as Andy Roddick says, you have to finish reading the entire book before you know how it ends. He's so right. And that's what I'm always saying, the same thing. Let's see. You know, Rafa feels like winning
my
too.
Book is not yet completed, David, because Mary, while you were away, and I'm very glad you weren't privy to these tips as well, has taught me how to win at tennis.
Win Wimbledon.
Win Wimbledon. World number one was
You'll
mentioned.
Have to listen to the podcast.
You already know how to win at tennis because
I thought I did.
Which is all that matters.
I thought I did.
So far.
But now I really
in our
know.
Best of three matches over a space of 10 years.
Just need to get my arm out of a sling and get going.
Yeah, that's right. So hold on a minute. What do we all think? Who is going to end up retiring with the most slams out of Federer and Nadal?
Oh.
That's what I just told Federer. You my Andy Roddick story.
I think
they could be even.
Oh, man, imagine
even.
That. Imagine if they both retired on the same day that they ended up even.
Even or Federer, I don't think Nadal is quite going to overtake
him. And you don't think Djokovic could... He's got 12 now. You don't think he can...
A few years ago, I thought that was a real possibility. I think he's 31. It's just too many.
No, my mind still goes back to what Roddick said at the Australian last year when he said how big a match that was, that final was, because if Nadal had won it, I think we would have been talking about Nadal as overtaking him. I think he'll end up just short.
Yeah.
You think Roger stays?
Federer's just not going to retire until he's got a healthy enough gap.
Is Serena going to make 25?
Oh, yeah. And beyond, I would think.
Well,
I think she's got more in her. Yeah, I don't think she's looking to beat Margaret Court. I think she's looking to be Serena Williams, the all-time great. I honestly don't think she compares herself against anybody else.
I think that would be good for the sport as well.
It'd be great.
Absolutely. Yeah. So her story is it will cut through all the noise. I know we're all, particularly in British broadcasting circles, a bit, you know, demoralised by how much of a sideshow Wimbledon feels this year to the World Cup, as much as up until last night we enjoyed the World Cup journey.
I'm still enjoying it.
Some turncoats continue to enjoy it. But
some of us with a foot in Buzz camp.
but I really think that is a story, the Serena story, will cut through all the noise of everything else that is happening in the world right now. And that would be very welcome. Kerber winning would also be welcome. It just...
Have you two predicted on that one yet?
Yeah, I went Serena.
Well, I went for Kerber, but Mary's persuaded me.
No, don't listen to me.
So I think we're in for an epic.
I think it's going to be an epic,
Serena
too.
Takes it.
Yeah. Staying on
I'm going to watch. I'm going to watch.
I suppose we better go and let Mary have dinner now.
Yeah. I'll leave you with the Blackberries that I mortgaged my flat for, Mary's. Mary, that is your
that's my parting gift.
It's like a party bag. Do you have party bags in the States?
Absolutely.
Yep. That is it.
That's very
I've got some really nice vinaigrette in my bag as well, if I can.
We pay big on the tennis podcast, don't we?
Vinaigrette. Wow.
A We have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, with Amazon Prime Video UK, the home in the UK of the US Open, at which myself, Mary and David Law will be doing, well, Dave and I will be doing daily podcasts. I don't think Mary's signing up to appear every day.
I think we can convince her.
And who else have we got? We've got our executive producers, Triple S, Melanie Bowes, TennisBalls.com, La Manga Club, and Charlie the Ferret, who he seems to be doing better.
He's on the mend. He's on the mend. Incidentally, Melanie Bowes is going to be picking out questions in our guest editor listener question special over the next few days.
My question to her is, what do you know that we don't? Because she is trouncing us all in the predictions competition for the second consecutive
year. Irritating.
And we'll put that behind us and be back tomorrow.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.